It's your daily sports dump. And I'm your host, Joe Canelli. Yes, that's right, folks. It's me, your host, Joe Canelli. This is your daily sports dump for today, Friday, March 27th, and the whole weekend. This episode's good enough for the whole weekend. And really, I should be getting all the episodes out at this time of day. I have no excuses. So, that's what I'm doing today. All right? Get off my back. Oh, my goodness. We got a great one for you today. I thought we were just going to have a fantabulous interview, but it turns out we're going to actually have jokes and a fantabulous interview, which is, you know, that's pretty rare for our show to have really any of those things. So, let's just get to the jokes. All right. Hold on one second. Give me a break. And here's your jokes. Bucks coach Bruce Arians told reporters yesterday Antonio Brown would not be showing up on his team this season. Someone else you shouldn't expect to see showing up on the Bucks this season? The good Tom Brady. We shall see. In more NFL news, NFL Commissioner Roger Goodell announced the NFL draft will proceed as scheduled, and he warned anyone in the league that talking badly against the draft could lead to disciplinary action. Now, Goodell's move, of course, is designed to curb the most disturbing phenomenon in America today, people talking about the NFL draft. Unlike in years past, this year's NFL draft will not allow fans to attend. So, it's going to be business as usual for the Chargers at the draft this year. Nobody wears those jerseys at the draft. And Peyton Manning surprised students at the University of Tennessee yesterday by making an appearance in a few online classes. Now, Manning said that going to school is different with the coronavirus epidemic going on because students are scared and online learning creates a sense of isolation. And social distancing makes it incredibly difficult to rub your balls on an unwilling trainer's head. Look it up. All right, folks, those were the jokes for today. And that means you've got the best part coming up right now, which is a conversation I had a few days ago with a friend of mine, Andrew Freed. If you don't know the name, you should, because this is the man responsible for Chef's Table. But more appropriate to this podcast, he is also responsible for Last Chance U, the Netflix documentary focusing on players at community college playing football, Last Chance for them, and also the big hit of this year, Cheer. So check that out. And check out this conversation we had, and I hope you enjoy it, and have a great weekend, and we'll be back on Monday. I'll do announcements after the interview, so you can ignore them then. Okay. No, I'll do them now. SportsDump.com, new content. The Sports Dump. No. Sports Dump Show on Twitter, and the_sports_dump on Instagram. Okay. That's all you need to know. Subscribe, rate, and review. We need those ratings and reviews. Bye, Andrew Freed. Here he comes. Here's my transition sound. Whoop. Here we are as the leaf blower starts in perfect timing. We are here with Andrew Freed. Freed, thank you for joining me today.
Thank you for having me virtually, Joe. I would not be with you today.
I will have you any way I can get you, and so this is the way I can get you. This is probably the way I would have gotten you anyway, but now you're kind of pinned into your house, so you had less options to get out of it.
It's a simpler time, Joe.
It is a simpler time. Like the beer that they sell at Trader Joe's, simpler times. Or is that there's some beer I had called Simpler Times. Anyway.
I have no doubt you did.
I did. Thank you for trusting me. Now, Andrew, I know you from a long time ago before. I had your basic bio up, and then about 10 minutes ago, I went to this extensive bio. Of course you have a assistant contacting me. Look at all this stuff you got going on.
Did Michael Scott say it? I'm sort of a big deal.
Yes.
I will.
And I believe you've said this before in the press, but you credit most of your success to an early project you did called Writer's Room for AMC. Is that where basically the inspiration for all this stuff came?
It's the foundation upon which all of this is built, Joe.
That's amazing.
But all kidding aside, I will say this. that I do very fondly remember. So for those who don't know what we're talking about, we Joe and I worked together on these sketches. It was basically 30-second sketches. We did like 120 of them or something.
Oh, my goodness.
Over a couple of years.
That's a huge number.
Yeah, we did a lot of them, and we filmed them at the time in my office. So I had a
right.
little, like, three-person office.
Down in Santa Monica.
Was the set.
Yes.
That's correct. But one of my favorite memories of that whole thing was that when I would come back to my desk, so we would just shoot a couple days a month and shoot in the current, in our office.
Right.
And you, I guess, being the boss character,
that's
sat
right.
at my desk or were around my desk for much of the day. I always fondly remember it. I was laughing about it this morning, that when I would come back, all my files had been renamed.
Yes.
And all of the shows had been renamed.
Right.
To incorporate your name into the title of the show.
And, yes.
That, so,
you
so
never
I,
followed
that
direction.
End, yeah.
My name never appeared in any of these shows. And ultimately...
Your heart appears in all of them.
That's true. I clearly wasn't sending the right signal, because I actually didn't care about my name being in. I wanted to be in those shows, and I would have worked under a pseudonym, which probably would have worked better for everyone anyway, because pseudonyms are very popular, and my name probably doesn't draw the same level of interest.
I think putting your name as the titles of all the shows gave you a leg up on someone who wasn't named.
That's true.
That's true. At the time, we were producing a show called The Conversation, and I remember the folder.
Yes. I do remember.
The finale versus station.
Yes. I see how that's a little bit lumpy to say. It doesn't really flow.
Well,
you know what does work? Joe Canale's Joke and Alley for a open mic, and I've used it before.
Wow.
So.
Wow. That is.
That does work.
That is. That's sharp.
Yeah.
That's sharp.
Yeah. I'm thinking of just naming my name to Jokin' Alley. And maybe I'll be kind of like, again, like a, like a novelty comic.
I was going to say, you can wheel out a bag of things, smash some sort of produce, maybe?
Oh, not in these times, actually. But eventually, I hope we'll get back to the place where we can just smash produce, with disdain. Or any emotion. Now,
or joy. Yeah, I smash produce with joy.
Absolutely. Yeah, you can smash it. It's like playing the drums. You can play the drums any way you want it. It's still going to be loud. And that's the most important part. Now, I'm honestly most familiar with your chef's table work. And I didn't realize this. 8 seasons. Woo! That's impressive.
Yeah. Well, thanks, Joe, and thanks for reading my bio before having me on the show here. I think that is appreciated.
It shows.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. I knew off the top of my head, I knew the three that probably many people know, other than the writer's room, The Last Chance U, and Chef's Table, and Cheer. Now, Cheer and Last Chance U are the ones that are more applicable to this particular podcast. And Cheer is the current hit right now. But I still want to ask.
Cheer is.
I mean,
yeah.
It's everywhere. Is that the biggest so far of the three?
Yeah, I mean, it's hard, in all seriousness. Like, it's hard to compare them because it's different times and different media. I mean, the launch of Chef's Table was not this sort of overwhelming thing. It was cool.
Right.
It was Netflix's first unscripted original series, and so
it was
a big deal. Like,
yeah.
I remember
a trailblazer.
Being in New York. It's huge, yeah. No, all kidding aside, like, it was a big deal.
Yes.
We were their first, unscripted project, and so I remember being in New York right before the launch and seeing a double-decker bus drive by with, like, a huge ad on the side of it, and it was just like, holy shit. Like,
yeah.
This is the whole thing.
Right.
But Chef's Table really grew over time.
Yeah.
Meaning,
the first couple seasons were
one
restaurant, am I right?
Each episode, right. Each episode is a different
chef
and restaurant that's profiled. But you know, season one was a big deal. It was, you know, it changed the landscape for us, certainly.
Yeah.
But it wasn't until, like, season three of that where people were, like, excited about it and starting to, like, fanboy over it.
Right.
In a way that was, like, really cool.
Yeah, oh, absolutely.
Cheer, you know, Cheer that's released amidst, like, this somewhat crowded landscape of all of these awesome shows on Netflix and other places. But, like, there's so much that's good.
Yeah.
And there's so much released every week that it's sort of hard to break through the clutter of that.
Right.
But Cheer came out. I knew that I liked it a whole lot, and I knew that I thought it was pretty great.
Yes.
But there's no way to know that it's going to break through the way that it did. And then it just became, like, huge crossover thing where the cheerleaders from Navarro are on Ellen one day,
right,
and they're being parodied on Saturday Night Live 3 days later, and it's just like, it was crazy. You know, it was crazy. And
yeah, that's when I knew, when I saw it on SNL, because my wife had been watching it at that point, and then I watched the first episode, and this is the same thing that happened to me when I watched Game of Thrones. When the kid fell, and no spoiler there, in Game of Thrones, that kid ends up living the whole time or whatever, but I stopped Game of Thrones after that, and then a girl, she falls, you know, and it's no, again, no spoiler, it's a cheerleading thing, and I just was like, ah! And I kind of like, I stopped watching that episode at that point because I had a visceral falling reaction. So that's my problem.
But you watch football.
Exactly. Exactly. There's an inherent sexism there, isn't there? There certainly is.
Yeah. Oh.
I accept
it. The girl falling.
Well, and maybe it's also, I have daughters and I have a very gymnastics oriented 6-year-old, which is, you know, I'm not, you know, she finally is kicking the soccer ball now that we're all locked in. And of course, I kicked it on the garage roof and it's gone. Ugh. Anyway, that's, enough about me. They hear enough about me. So
these are challenges. These are challenges. But okay, so you have a visceral reaction
to just that in Cheer, yes.
Okay, but then you gave it another chance.
I'm about to.
Oh, you haven't. Okay, well, that's fine.
And look, other people are going to say to you, oh, yeah, I watched the whole series. This is honesty here. I will get to the series because my wife keeps, you know, she wants me to catch up.
I'll tell you, Joe, this is so refreshing because so many of these interviews that you do, you get on with someone or you sit in the room with someone and they know everything about you.
Yeah.
I mean, they've watched all the shows, they've read all the things.
Yeah, research.
I feel so much more connected to you. It's like, you know, writing a book report for a book you haven't quite read. Like, I feel that connection.
Well, I'm not just reciting stuff and setting you up for your stand-up material. I don't go for that stuff.
No
pre-interview or anything. This is a conversation where I'm catching up with you.
It's like an alley-versation.
Yeah. Oh, my God. Well, I see what you're doing. You've already probably got copyright on that. And then I'm going to put the show out as that. Boom, you've got another hit show on your hands.
Yeah, no, this is how I just churn out the hit.
That's right. You do a podcast,
but I will,
and then you trick the person.
In all seriousness.
Go ahead.
No spoiler alerts, but there are young women who fall in Cheer. That said, if you can, you know, mentally prepare for that and overcome.
Yeah.
I wouldn't say any of it is graphic.
No, even that first one is not. They missed the catch a little bit. It's not a big fall. It's not.
Well, no. The injuries, maybe. I'm just saying the coverage of it.
Well, I know this
is not like gross.
No, no, and I know this for a fact.
But I think you'll like the show. I really think you'll like the show, and I think it will surprise you in hopefully the way that it has surprised a lot of sports fans, in that it really is sport. And we've spent our whole lives not necessarily thinking of cheerleading in that way, but like it's hardcore.
Oh, the competition. I mean, I've seen it, and I know that the number one sport for injuries in high school is cheerleading. Am I correct? I thought that I knew that, like, for years that was the case. And those are injuries, you know, there's not a lot of other sports where you're coming down from 15 feet in the air unless you're really, really good at basketball.
This is to be taken seriously for sure.
And like so many other sports, it has in the last 10 years kind of ramped up incredibly. Like you look at just look at the bodies of the male cheerleaders now versus, you know, 15, 20 years ago at a Big Ten game or whatever. Yeah, they're throwing her up in the air, but these guys are, they could be on the football team almost, some of them. They're jacked.
Well, certainly they can. But I think that's true across all sports, right?
Like, yes, no, definitely.
I love looking at, like, baseball clips in the late 70s,
yep.
Like very early 80s,
yep.
Where, you know, it's just, they're like some fat guys out there.
Fernando
like,
Valenzuela.
Yeah. Who was the guy? You're a Chicago guy. Who was
sure.
the guy who played for the White Sox? Like a real.
Greg Luzinski.
Fat guy. Greg Luzinski. Yeah.
Steve Balboni was a fat guy on Kansas City. Yeah. There was a bunch of fatties.
Yankees. Steve Balboni had a Yankees run.
Yes, he did.
For a bit.
Yes, he did. All the fat guys got a chance to look like Babe Ruth.
And so the fat guys there, the, you know, basketball players, the
oh,
football,
yes.
The
absolutely.
Phil Konecki, was that a guy who played basketball back in the day? Terrible hairline.
Who were you saying? Pietkowski?
Oh, no. I thought he played for the Bucks. There were these guys in that played for the Milwaukee Bucks.
Tractor Trailer was a big, chubby guy. I mean, he was called Tractor Trailer. Anderson? Cadillac Anderson?
No, before him, too. I'll look it up. I'll send you a text.
Jack Sikma?
But anyway, I think... To get back on track.
Yes,
sorry.
Back on track.
Like
right.
I think golfers, baseball players,
yes.
A lot of athletes that used to be soft around the middle now are just like real physical stuff.
That's
so
true.
That's super,
you think of Craig Statler?
Male and female.
Yeah, absolutely. Definitely. It's been taken to, like, it really has jumped up quite a bit, which is why maybe they should just let all the PEDs be legal. I don't know.
Seems like a different podcast.
It does.
Which podcast can we cover that on?
I have the drug podcast I could do. Oh, I will ask a question, and I don't know if this is a spoiler. Are there PEDs in cheerleading?
There's nothing that comes up in this show
okay.
like that. But I would imagine that anybody who is trying to push themselves to a limit physically.
Right.
To be stronger and faster and heal more quickly is certainly flirting with that. I mean, I hope I'm not saying anything too controversial by saying that.
No.
I don't know anything that anybody else doesn't know.
Right.
But
they could even be taking Adderall
yeah.
to be quicker or to be clearer in their head maybe for it. Who knows? You know, I didn't know about when I was in high school about kids taking – like performance-enhancing study drugs. That never occurred to me, but that was, you know, I guess that was a thing.
I think that was after our time.
It was.
Don't you think there weren't those drugs
no.
in high school. I feel like that's a little bit, like maybe once we were in college,
yeah.
I started hearing about those things.
A little bit, but again, only on the periphery. My experiences were more with the hippie drugs in my lifetime.
Are.
You know, and a couple times I tried other things in the context of hippie drugs. Like I remember taking ecstasy when I was in college with just two of my buddies, and we sat on a couch, and my cat got pet more than that animal had ever been pet in its life. And we were like, what are we doing? You know, we were just sitting on the couch like, why did we take this? It was
just like rolling our faces, listening to fish and petting our animals.
Right. That's exactly.
Telling them how great they are.
That is exactly. Yeah. Boy, it's like you were there.
It's like I was there.
Yeah. You probably were in a similar place or something. Now, Last Chance U, that also appeals a little bit to me because I am a big college football fan. And is it five seasons of that? Have you do you have a season in the can or did it just come out?
Those shows come out around football season.
Okay.
So there will be another season that comes out in August.
That you already shot.
That we already shot.
Got it.
Yeah.
And what's and so, we got the same school this year?
I don't know what I'm allowed to say or not.
Oh, okay.
It's a new school. I can say that much, but I don't know. I lose track of what's been announced.
Absolutely. Okay.
And what hasn't.
But you had a new school.
You know, both those shows, I would be remiss if I didn't say that, you know, both Cheer and Last Chance You are directed by Greg Whiteley,
mm-hmm.
who is just this amazing storyteller. And, you know, if you look at what he's done with those two shows, I think he has reimagined really what a mainstream documentary series can be.
Yeah.
Those are so far from what a reality show would be.
Oh, definitely.
But the audience that it's appealing to is pretty broad. So,
well, it has the elements because it does capture the drama of those situations, but it doesn't manipulate the drama. That's the documentary style, which, you know, that's obviously what documentaries are, but so many things have become, you know, blurred the line of reality these days that it's actually refreshing to see just following it along. And I would guess in both those instances, you don't go in necessarily with too many storylines. You just kind of discover as you go. There is an improvisational, I would guess, element to that.
Well, that's the genius of Greg and his team, is their ability to be listening and responding and strategizing around what they're actually learning about their subject and about the world.
Yeah.
That they're inhabiting. I mean, the first thing about it is, you know, sports, because there's a universality to sports, right?
Sure.
There's a ticking clock, you know, so much when we're developing shows, especially if we're trying to make something that's pure documentary, the feedback or the criticism that you'll get either internally as you're developing it or as you try to take it to market is, you know, what are the stakes and what's the ticking clock? Right? What's the ticking clock do?
Yeah.
Well,
right.
Sports has the ticking clock, and the stakes are, you know, winning and losing.
Yeah.
And I know that every week, like, what's going to separate me from episode to episode? Well, I know every week there's going to be a game. There's going to be a favorite, an underdog, and then there's going to be a winner and a loser. And then we're going to do it again, and then it's all building to this crescendo of playoff, championship,
right.
We'll have. And so much of it is built in.
Yeah.
That Greg then has the freedom with his team to, you know, basically make a documentary film told in 6 or 8 parts, depending
right.
on the theory.
Right.
But he's really, really good at that. And,
yeah.
And people watch those shows, I think, that are surprised. Like, you know, how many times do you hear somebody say, oh, I'm not really into football, but I love Last Chance.
Yeah.
Or I never thought I'd like a cheerleading show, but And hopefully that's true for some of the things we do that Greg isn't a part of. But, you know, like, Chef's Table, the same thing. Like, I'm not really into food, but I, like, it's trying to, you know, get as many eyeballs and as broad an appeal on.
Well, and it's about relationships, too, because the Chef's Table show is about the chef's relationship with food and cooking and how that was shaped. And like you say, we all know there's going to be a season and wins and losses. But the subtleties in the relationships is what keeps you kind of invested in it. And then, as you were talking about it, I realized everyone's season ends on an emotional note. Whether it be a high or a low, nobody's season doesn't end with some big kind of emotional finish. So you do have that. You don't know if it's happy ending or not, but you know that it's going to be something that kind of delivers one or the other.
Well, there's going to be closure.
Right.
There's
going to
be
structure
along the way, and
right.
there's going to be closure. There's going to be a build something. It's why sports movies are, you know, so universal as well. They're they're Westerns, but with a clock that's ticking and a winner at the end.
Yeah.
You know, like, the good guys wear white, the bad guys wear black, but, you know, whatever the case may be, but, like, it's just a Western that, I guess, instead of leading to a duel, leads to a game, but whether it's Rudy or Hoosiers or... You know,
yeah, they all have yeah, you're right.
doing the triple Lindy and back to school.
Yeah,
like,
it's the showdown at the end.
Yeah, yeah.
Wow, you've really demystified sports. I don't know if I can publish this episode and have people keep being sports fans.
I'm sure Even with the Dangerfield reference?
You're right. That kept it in. That was nice.
I worked Dangerfield into that.
You did.
I feel like
you did it very nicely, too.
And you had a Letterman moment there where you called it the Chef's Table Show, which I really liked.
I'm like him in a lot of ways. Probably he did similar levels of preparation, and we both have a gap between our teeth.
Yeah, you got a Letterman thing going.
Oh, I mean, he's a heavy influence. Heavy influence.
Oh, good.
I'll never be able to grow a beard like that, but oh, definitely. Letterman's the best.
There was a comic I used to know named Bob Oshak, and I don't know if he's like a famous comic now or just stopped doing it.
Right.
But he had a very Letterman thing to him that he always made me laugh, that guy. Yeah. You know?
Kind of a class clowny sarcasm.
Yeah, a little snark.
I like people who appreciate snark. No. I feel like people like snark from a distance a lot.
You don't want to be
the closer the snark.
Married to snark.
All right. Like, don't tell my wife.
Because you don't want to work every day with snark. You don't want to be married to snark.
Yeah.
But
snark in small doses. And I try to pepper the snark in with some other stuff, too, when I can. But snark is definitely predominant. Now, I would...
Snark with heart.
Well, yes.
That's the magic formula, right?
Well, I've tried to take a few of my potentially negative tendencies, like, for example, I'll bring this to sports a little bit. I've shut down a couple leagues or tournaments in sports just with some assholish behavior. But one thing I say a lot of times in these softball interactions I get in is, you know, somebody's yelling. I go, listen, man, I know I'm the biggest asshole on my team. Do you know you're the biggest asshole on your team? Because if you don't know it, it's, you know, I use my self-awareness and I try to target, like I have bullying tendencies because I was an older brother. And what I've decided to do is if I'm going to bully, I'm only going to lash out at like the most evil. Like, you know, like a Twitter thing or just somebody who's racist or somebody who deserves it. I really try to make it a deserving.
You're like a Robin Hood. You're like a Robin Hood of bullies.
Yes.
You will bully people, but you're bullying on behalf of the people.
Yes. To take it to Twitter, I'm like the good troll.
You're a good troll.
Yes.
Okay.
The good troll. You know, yeah, that's it. Like
I do remember, you know, I remember about you that you get in heightened, emotionally dramatic situations around Sporky. I had forgotten that.
I do.
But that is like a big Joe Canale thing.
It is. I have competitive issues in sports. Like, because I was short for a long time, and then I had a growth spurt, but it was kind of too late at that point. So I got the short man's attitude.
I think your listeners, if they don't know you, are imagining a much bigger, tougher Joe Canale, the bully, who was short before he had a big growth spurt. Like, they're probably imagining some big rock of a man. I won't spoil it for anyone.
Well, I do photograph with a very thick neck. So if you ever see a photograph of me just from, like, neck up, I've been asked before if I ever played football. I also had touch football. I had Pete Gross, who I talked to him earlier today, a friend of mine from Chicago. He plays Mike Pence on the President Show. And we were talking about, he and I played in this theater league, football league. And we were both talking about how, you know, amongst nerds and theater people, we're tremendous athletes. But amongst regular athletes, we would be mediocre athletes. But since the league we were playing in was so bad, I could, you know, people didn't know the rules of football, let alone how to play it. So it was a stacked game.
Sounds like me in summer camp. Like I was actually the opposite of you. I was a huge kid. Like I was the 13-year-old who was like shaving and had hair on his arms.
Yes.
And, like, I would, like, post kids up on the block. And, like, I was sweaty, like, man sweaty. These were, like, little kids. Like, if you see the video, if you see the video, like, you're just going to run into it. But if you saw the video from my bar mitzvah, like,
sure, I'll look
I'm
for it.
I'm towering over, like, the kids in my class.
Yes.
But I went to a school where, like, they were real athletes. There was, you know, it was a diverse public school that I went to, a big public school.
Long Beach, Long Island? Is that
right? Long Beach, Long Island. And so I, no matter how early I went through puberty,
yeah,
I still was never getting on the basketball team at my school. But when I went to camp,
right,
it was like somehow I flew through the air with the grace and toughness.
Where'd you go to camp?
Real athlete in camp.
Did you go upstate?
Trails in camp, Beach Lake, Pennsylvania.
Okay.
9 summers. Loved every second of
it. Is that the Poconos? Is that the Poconos?
Catskill, right.
Okay, yeah.
I would say it's Catskill adjacent.
Sure. Yeah, the Catskills. Yeah. Absolutely. Oh, sure. Everyone, I didn't do summer camp, but everyone loves it who did it. Everyone. My kid included. Loves it. So maybe I missed out. All right. Well, I got one more thing I got to ask you about because, as I said before, although I should ask you about Freestyle Love Supreme, that because we both, that's an improv thing.
It is. It's our nexus.
Yeah.
In many ways.
Well, Anthony, of course, worked with us on that project.
Yeah. Anthony was the director. Anthony directed, I think the final count was 128. Or 131, for some reason, I always have those two numbers in my head. But of those writers' room vignettes that we did for AMC that you were in. And
that's a lot.
I don't want to start naming everyone because I don't want to forget anyone. But they were wonderfully fine.
That was a good cast.
Wonderfully talented people.
A lot of funny people. It was a lot of fun. And
Anthony Vinicielli.
Absolutely. And there was improv in that. I mean, mostly it was the scripts and stuff, but we went off, and it was a... especially for promotional type thing, a very loose atmosphere. And maybe it's, you know, if it had been a national commercial, it would have been a different scenario. But because there was the McDonald's people, I remember they were in the room and they were holding the cups and stuff, you know, and turning it and everything. But really the content, ultimately, they were kind of whatever.
Well, if you remember, we filmed 12 30-second spots in 2 days.
Right. Yeah.
And so, you know, we had to just get through
it. The script, it's not.
The scripts were written by Matthew Shire, who is, you know, not like a fully bona fide TV writer, but he was just turning out these 30-second spots, basically, that left a lot of room for play and listening and discovery and response. And Anthony, you know, ran through them a couple of times and got some coverage. And then, you know, we Mario Morris was his name, just like cut those away, you know, the exercise was just like, all right, I got to hit 30 seconds and I got to have an in and I got to have an out. It was all very improv.
Yeah. Everybody kind of working the same.
On the,
you know, everybody kind of running through doing everything as quick as possible. And the timing of all of it. Like a little factory going real quick. That's how they should do more stuff, though. Because I thought those, especially within the genre, were far and above more interesting and creative than most of the stuff you see in that kind of realm.
Yeah, they were cool. And I loved doing them, and it really put us into business. Like, I mean, we're joking about, like,
how it's
the foundation, but I never would have opened an office had I not been able to use it as a location for those. And so it really was a huge, huge thing for me. I had recently gone on my own.
Right.
I remember when we did a pilot. Remember Rachel Morrison shot our pilot. Rachel Morrison is like now one of the biggest cinematographers in Hollywood. She was first female nominated for an Academy Award in that category.
Oh, I saw you tweet. Did you tweet that out when that happened? I think I remember seeing that tweet. Because that was in a different office. That was a different location.
Correct.
Yeah.
So we did that pilot, and then AMC said, we'll do these, but we need to knock down the cost.
Right.
And I sort of went back to them and said, if you can guarantee me, you know, I think it was like 3 cycles of this.
Right.
Then I got, you know, I can build it around that.
Right.
So
we
that,
made up
that
for,
allowed me.
We did more, we did, that's why you did 131 episodes, because we were doing, like you said, instead of doing one that kind of was intricate for the day, we did 6.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And so, but it was cool. And again, what I was saying was, even in the edit, I remember sitting with Mario, and it felt like improv editing. Like, he was just like, okay, there's 6 jokes in here. I got to pick 2 because I got to hit 30 seconds, you know, right on the note. Like, it was...
Comedy editing?
Really,
I mean, I don't know what he, Mario's doing now, but that's, you know, having a sense of humor as an editor is a great, great tool. It's really so important. Just having edited a few little short things and been on, you know, in on that a little bit, it's as important as the as anything, because you're really controlling all the timing.
Well, I'll tell you the truth, and Mario, when music videos were big, and they were big budget music videos, it's funny, we're just doing this whole podcast about Mario. Hey, I'll have to tell him about it. I'm not really in touch with him anymore.
Well,
but now
I'll have to be a listener.
But he had been a huge music video editor.
Oh.
So the comedy to him, I think, was musical. Like, it had rhythm to it. I had met him because I produced the opening of Saturday Night Live, you know, years ago.
Yeah.
He came on as the editor of that. And, you know, that's obviously no dialogue at all. That's just,
right.
It's just a music edit.
Yep.
And so I think that that was very much how he approached comedy. And it's cool.
Yeah.
Those were cool things.
Good times. Good times.
And really, there would be no, you know, Boardwalk Pictures and all of these, you know, shows that we're so proud of if that project hadn't happened. So
wow.
Thank you to Mary Conlon at AMC who made that happen, right?
Absolutely. Big thanks to her. Well, I'll pitch you my next improv thing off the air. I don't want to share it. It's such a good idea.
Great.
And I'm going to save the goop thing because honestly, Andrew, we could be in for a couple months here and you're going to want to talk to me again by then. So I'll ask you those questions.
I was gonna say, let's make this a regular thing.
It's fun. I wish, you know, now it makes me want us to go get those ice creams, but I feel like I jinxed the ice cream float, so I don't want to do that anymore. Let's get away from that.
There will be milkshakes again.
All right.
There will be milkshakes.
Well, then my final thing, because since I'm putting goop off, I just want to extend this because, again, after looking at all your work that you've done, I don't know if you know this, but
thank you again for doing that.
For looking at the work, yes. Just reading it off the page right now.
Yeah, for looking at it. Yeah, no,
it's impressive, man. I knew the big 3, but then all this other stuff, you got stuff still coming out. Oh, yeah, is anything going to come out soon that people can look at because we're all desperate for content? What's next?
There are things, you know, unfortunately...
top secret.
Who knows what's going to be with the film releases. We have some documentary features that we've been working on that we're really excited to share with the world. Anthony's among them. We have Freestyle Love Supreme, which premiered at Sundance. And, you know, so a lot of those things are up in the air, but we have more street food that's coming out soon. And we're editing some Chef's Table episodes to get those out as soon as we can. And there are some new shows. They're actually, you know, all kidding aside, there are a couple of sports series that we have going for Netflix that will be out soon that I'll have a reason to come talk to you again.
Wonderful.
Because those are exciting, and once we can talk about them, they're cool. I've had a really nice time working with the teams who have been making those.
So. Oh, that's awesome. Well, we'll keep updated on that. And again, I just wanted to share with you that The Ringer, which is a sports podcast and network, was recently evaluated at $220 million. Barstool Sports, $450 million. And that's why I'm telling everyone who I think might, you know some venture capitalists, we are currently willing to sell the sports dump for $1 million. Because I think we are at least 1/220th as good as The Ringer. So I'm just putting it out there. Not for you, but if you know some people, you know, looking
that's
to buy
how valuations
a
work. That is how, is it?
I hope so.
Yes, that's my understanding.
That's good.
The real heroes are made by saying, I'm worth 1/120th.
I can make cars 1/1 billionth as well as Ford, I'm saying. And that's probably accurate.
So buy a car from me for like $20.
Yes, exactly. Right. Oh, all right. We're in business. Well, Andrew, this was a great treat. Aside from the fact that I got to record it, but the conversation was great. And yeah, we'll do it again, and maybe we'll get a little bit into Goop because I'm very interested. They did a mushroom episode, correct?
There's a mushroom episode.
Okay.
There's a female orgasm episode.
Okay.
There's
too much teasing.
Sex drugs.
Too much teasing. Wait, what was the last thing?
All the things. Sex, drugs, and lots of other goopy things.
Sex, drugs, and goop and roll. All right. Excellent.
Yeah, thank you.
All right. Well, we look forward to that next talk, and thanks again.
Yeah, let's do it soon.
That was Andrew Freed. Thank you to him, and thank you to you from me. Later.